All right. Well, welcome to Greek Club at Concordia Seminary. We are reading 2 Corinthians, and we are in chapter 2 towards the end of it. I think we basically got to through verse 11, this paragraph from 5 to 11 where Paul is trying to guide the Corinthians in their relationship with apparently an individual who may have been one of Paul's chief opponents in causing the controversy and so forth. He announces his forgiveness, verse 10, and warns them not to be defrauded or fooled by Satan. And then finally, for we are not ignorant of his schemes or his ways of thinking in verse 11. So then verse 12 actually picks up kind of the travel log, if I could say it that way. And just to quickly review, this is one of the places, in fact, I have this in my head because in class at 12:30, we're talking about the ins and outs of Pauline chronology, right? And how there are times when you have to supplement the narrative of Acts with data from the epistles. And one of the times to do that is this lengthy Ephesian ministry on the so-called third missionary journey. 1 Corinthians is written during that period. And then you have to, given what's at the end of 1 Corinthians and what we're reading now at the beginning of 2nd, you sort of have to posit, and this is the way most people do it, I think, that although Acts does not record any of this, Paul actually made a trip to Corinth, was rebuffed there, returned to Ephesus and wrote what scholars often call the sorrowful letter. Then went on the road north to Macedonia, Troas in Macedonia, doing ministry, but restless, as he'll say here in just a second, because he hadn't heard yet from Titus, who was his main man in the effort at reconciliation. Now, none of this is recorded in Acts. See, Acts just has Paul in Ephesus. He's there for at least 2 years and 3 months, and then he leaves. So it just reminds us that, as I like to say, although Acts is inspired and inerrant, it's spotty or incomplete, at least by our standards. It's not incomplete by the Holy Spirit standards, because that's what he wanted, right? But this is one of the interesting pieces of chronology valid reconstruction. So at any rate, Paul brings this topic up then in verse 12. See, he's narrating how he was doing with his relationship with them until he was awaiting word from Titus. So verse 12 would conceivably, maybe we should read 12 and 13. It's not too long of a sentence, but we need to get to 13 to get to the main verb. Verse 12, Elthonda eis tein troada, eis ta evangelion tu Christu, kai thirasmoi ane augmenes en kirio, uk escheka anazen to pneumatemu, to me hilrein me titan tan adolfanmu. Ala, apataxamenas autois ex elthon eis makadanean. So we start with two participles, right? The main verb of the sentence is the second word in verse 13, escheka, which is from our friend echo, and this is a perfect indicative active first person singular. So the main legs of the sentence, if you could say it that way, is I did not have, or I have not had. The grammars actually struggle with how much of the perfect stems force to really read into this one. Some actually call it an aoristic perfect, but that's just what grammarians say when they feel that uncontrollable urge to label something. So kind of like uses of the genitive, as you all know about that. But we have two participles. Elthon is from erchomai, right? Aorist participle, active masculine, singular, nominative. And then we also have, oddly enough, I don't know if it's oddly or not, a genitive absolute after the kai. Thiras anaogmenes. This is from anoigo, which means I open. And this is a perfect participle passive, could be middle. Feminine singular genitive. So it's a genitive absolute. And thiras, door, is the referent of the participle. Now, when you have a double participle construction like this, they don't have to have the same force. See, it's purely context. So at least one way to take it would be to take the first participle phrase as temporal. After I had come into Troas, and if you remember your maps, basically Troas is sort of due north. I think Troas is still in Asia Minor, due north of Ephesus, where Paul had been carrying out ministry. By the way, the cross-reference here, let's see if it's in here somewhere. I think it's, yeah. Look at least on the side, the bottom of all that stuff on the side margin, Acts 20. This is where Acts records Paul's departure finally from Ephesus, and it's probably the same reference here. So after I'd come into Troas, and now we have ace plus the accusative, which, among other things, can express a sense of purpose or goal, right? So into, right? And so can be, and I think perhaps here is often translated for the gospel of Christ. And, woodenly, a door being opened for me in the Lord, the genitive absolute. But the contrast, it's something of a contrast because we have an open door and yet he doesn't have any rest and he moves on. And so what's one of the forces of a predicate position participle? Of course, a genitive absolute is just a kind of that might fit into this context. Anybody got an idea? Maybe. I can think of one that's seen, at least in my opinion. I have a white shirt on, so I'm right. Maybe a concessive force, even though a door had been opened and was open for me, dative of advantage, in the Lord. Even though that was the case, uk eskeka, I did not have anazin. I did not have relaxing or resting for or in relation to my spirit. And now we have a fairly rare construction, actually, in the New Testament, at least. The New Testament writers do not use the dative, articular, infinitive very often. It's apparently much more common in other Greek writers. But that's what we have. So the toe is actually governing the infinitive hail rain. Boy, I'm sorry we don't have more chairs in here. I suppose that's a good problem to have. Could I charge like a dollar a head next time? I could take Renee out for supper. So we have the dative articular pronoun, and it's normally suggested that here it has a causal force, and this is one of the options that the grammars will mention this, and there are a few examples of this in the New Testament, but not that many. And normally, as you may recall, the articular or the arthrous infinitive is after a preposition, like pros ta plus the infinitive or ace ta plus the infinitive, pra to plus the infinitive, and so forth. But this probably has a causal force here. Notice that the infinitive is negated by me, not u. This is the easy pattern. For the most part, in the New Testament writers, if it's an indicative mood verb, it's negated with u or a form of u. Any other verbal form is negated with me or a form of me. By the way, that's sometimes how you can tell whether a form is an indicative or an imperative. Because, as you know, especially present indicatives and present imperatives can be the same morphologically. They're spelled the same. But if it's got an u on it, it's going to be an indicative. If it's got a me, it's going to be an imperative or a prohibition. So because, and now probably the me is the accusative subject of the infinitive, because when infinitives have their own distinct expressed subjects, they're in the accusative case. And titan or Titus would be the direct object of the infinitive. And the tanto translation would be, because of me not to find Titus, right? But it's not too hard to smooth it out. Because I did not find Titus, now in apposition, the brother of me. Oh, we have to label the genitive. Yes, believe it or not, it is the genitive of relationship. See, Jamie, you wanted to call it the genitive of brotherhood or something, right? Yeah, which would have been cool. So, because I did not find Titus, my brother, rather, and now another participle, apotasomai means to say farewell to or renounce. This was the verb, by the way, in the gospel lesson for two Sundays ago, that unless you renounce all of your possessions, you cannot be my disciple. So here it probably just means say farewell. And it's aorist. You can see the sigma in the stem, apotax, and then the alpha semi-connecting vowel. So after I had said farewell to them, autois, ex aelthon, just our friend, ex erchomai, aorist indicative active, I departed into Macedonia, which is the Greek word for Thessalonica. Just kidding. So, right. It means Athens, right? So all of that basically, we have two main verbs. I did not have rest, and rather, I departed. So if you're going to diagram those sentences, that would be, the building blocks, and all those participles and infinitives hang off the main verbs as large adverbs, if I could say it that way. Questions? Anything at all about that sentence? It's a relatively long sentence, not horribly long, but has some interesting stuff in it. Anything? Like, what's that letter? Okay. All right. Now Paul goes, he goes theological on us here, and he will actually stay theological. Notice he mentions Titus. Flip over. I think it's in chapter 7. I didn't even look. My eye just happened to light on it. I don't think Titus comes up again by name until chapter 7, verse 13. So it's like we have this long, happy, theological exhortation and teaching that in which Paul is sort of building on the rapprochement or the reconciliation, which has now begun again with the Corinthians. So he's not gonna do the travelogue anymore. I know that breaks your heart, but he's gonna kind of shift theological gears. So verse 14, we can take just that verse. To de theo charis to pontita triambiuante hemas en to Christo kai tein osmein teis gnose es autu phanerunta de hemon en ponte topo. We need a verb, so we'll supply perhaps even an optative or an imperative. Charis most of the time, of course, means grace or gracious gift. Here it's normally translated thanks, right? And so we supply the verb may or let thanks be to God. And now let's describe God by repeating the article, to, and we'll put a participle in attributive position, right? Actually, two participles, believe it or not. The first one is triambuante. This is from triambuo, which means I have to look this up in the dictionary. It means to lead in victory procession, right? And what's interesting about the picture here, I just glanced at it in the lexicon, is the hemas, us, right, is the object of the participle, right? Now, what's the picture? Is God the conquering general, and are we the sort of his soldiers or something? Are we sort of accompanying him? Or, I mean, the more natural way would be that we would actually be captives in the train, in the processional, right? So it could probably go either way. It depends on how you want to take the picture. So we're being led fully by him, or we're sort of his co-workers or co-soldiers or something like this. Anyway, thanks be to God who always leads us in triumph, or leads us in victory processional in Christ. And now go six words down and get phanerunte. See, that one article, to, in the middle of the first line actually governs both of those participles. God who leads in victory procession and who manifests. So the one article has that much of a reach. And the chi that links them is actually part of what helps us to make that connection. So God who leads in triumph and who phanerōs, manifests or makes open, makes known. Now the direct object of that is tein asmein. We have two nouns in here coming up. The other one is euodia, and I think they seem to be synonymous. To be honest, I didn't do a lot of work, and they both mean aroma or fragrance. Okay, they're from the verb apparently as udzo, which I had never heard of, but this is why you buy big books, I mean, so you can look up stuff. And, of course, if you have it on your computer, that's morally inferior, right? I mean, yeah, that's right, yeah. I'm a disciple of God's servant, Johann Gutenberg. I'm just basically an old guy, and I don't like change. So, and James, well, yeah, I knew that. I've been hanging around him for a while. So anyway, who manifests the aroma, the asmein, of the knowledge of him. Now, this is probably an epexegetical genitive, the aroma which is the knowledge of him. That's the pleasing fragrance. And it's being manifested de hemon, through us, which is actually very cool and very humbling theologically and sort of existentially, that both Paul and in our own vocations, we would actually be the vehicle, as they say in Texas, of God's fragrance being manifested to the people around us, although the fragrance is ambiguous, as we'll see. It could be a happy fragrance. It could be a not-so-happy fragrance. So the fragrance, which is the knowledge of him, that's probably an objective genitive, to know him. Could be source, the knowledge that comes from him or something like that, and but we won't quibble over that. In every place at the end. So, thanks be to God. That's the main clause of this sentence. Comments? Questions? The bigger the group, the more silent it gets. Somebody just ask any question, like, what do I think about the Cardinals or how tall am I or anything like that. Somebody ask a question. Josh, ask a question, will you?
How many miles did you run
today? I didn't run today, actually. I took off. My knees were tired. So, how about you?
Three and a half.
That's good. Good. You probably went faster than I would have, so I'm glad I didn't go with you. Right. Yeah, if you give me a long enough lead and enough time, I might beat you. Right. So, okay, good. We'll keep going then. Verse 15. We have time for at least a couple more verses. Let's see. I think we'll get all the way through. Maybe we'll go through the end of verse 16. Hati Christou eodea esmen. To Theo entois sodzamenois, kai entois apalumenois. Hois men asme ekthanatu eis thanatan. Hois de asme ektoes eis zoein. Kai, this is great, kai prostauta tis hikanos. For, or because, now the verb is esmen, just the present indicative of eme, first person plural. We are, predicate nominative, again, the aroma, and again, this just seems to be a kind of a synonym for osme, which we just saw. We are the aroma of Christ. What the genitive of olfactory perception or something? I mean, I don't know. Well, we know what it means, right? We smell like Christ. I mean, I think that's what he's saying. Actually here. We are the aroma of Christ with respect to God or something like that. Among, n plus a dative, and we've got a plural substantized participle repeated, so probably among. Tois sodzamenois, those who are being saved, and among those who are being destroyed or perishing. This latter verb, apolimi, which is an extremely evil verb because it has two sets of principal parts, an active and a middle, right? I have my glasses off, but I can actually see Will Stelzer back there nodding and smiling. And behind, next to him is Clayton, who's rolling his eyes. The middle forms actually mean to be destroyed, or normally translated, perish. So here, those who are perishing. They're both present stem. Now, it's possible, at least, because Paul does talk about being saved as something which hasn't happened yet, and what he'll have in mind there is the final eschatological salvation, right? So in that sense, all Christians, although in one sense we're already saved, aorist indicative, right? On the other hand, we're still moving towards that final salvation. And it's just possible that Paul has that in here, in mind here with the present stem. That is, we are all in the process of being saved. Not that I've become a Roman Catholic or something, but that we're moving toward that final act of Christ in which salvation is finally and fully manifested. So, and again, it's easy enough. Both of those participles have an article, so they're both in attributive position, and they're just nouns, right? The being saved guys and the being destroyed or the perishing guys. And then in verse 16, we have a mandat construction, right? And it's a little awkward. This is one way to do it. You use a relative pronoun. It's this that agrees in gender number case with the antecedent. So to whom, on the one hand, and then what supply we are, the fragrance. Now this is ek ace. This is I thought I remembered what people said about this, and I looked it up, and yes, I had remembered what people say. One of the ways to explain this, the most famous example of this is in Romans 1, right? Ek pistos eis piston, out of faith unto faith, see? And one of the suggestions is that it means sort of utterly by faith, or here, utterly by death or for death, and utterly by life or for life or something like that, that it's an emphatic way of saying something. And that's what the lexicon actually suggests here, so maybe we'll just take it that way. There's not that many instances of this idiom in the New Testament, and to be honest, I haven't searched around in Greek literature to get more data on this. So to the one, we are the fragrance, utterly for death, or something like that. But to the other, the fragrance utterly for life. And again, what this shows, as Paul himself then says, toward these things, who is sufficient? Question. See? So the fact that Paul in his apostolic ministry is either the aroma, the complete aroma that smells like death, or the complete aroma that smells like life, the fact that he himself is that is not something that's being said about him. It's simply because he has been selected to be the aroma of Christ. Right? And so remarkably, the same can be said, you know, I think of others, not only in the ministry of the word, we would include pastors in that, but to a certain extent, all Christians. Right? We are called to bear Christ and so to be his aroma. The fact of the matter, of course, is that sometimes it'll be a happy aroma, and sometimes it'll be a nasty aroma to the people that we're around. And our only job is not to be jerks, and to be a nasty aroma because you're a butthead or something like that. So, did I just say butthead? Yeah. Okay. Well, that's no. Thank you. No. This is now the third time I'm coming to you. 2 Corinthians 13. Okay. So easy enough, not too bad grammar. Any questions about 15 and 16? And maybe I'm looking at my watch. I got class, so maybe we'll stop here. So.